Shane O'Curry from Enar, Ireland. Good morning, Shane, and welcome to Northside Today.
Good morning, Donny. Thanks very much for calling me.
Shane, we're going to have a quick word first about the Wear Red for November. This is the latest advertising, I suppose, in relation to anti-racism.
Yeah, so this is a campaign that's been run successfully by one of our member organisations, Show Racism the Red Card. And it's an initiative where people are basically asked for the month of November to wear red, and there's a number of wear red events. And it's basically to start conversations and make people aware that racism in all of its forms is a problem in Irish society, and it's a gentle way of getting people to focus on this problem. And we've seen that lately in a number of ways. So Enar Ireland itself has reports of racism reported through the iReport.ie system, which was set up 5 years ago to capture the unacknowledged incidents of racism that our other institutions didn't have the focus or ability to capture. And so we set up this system, and in the 5 years and 17 reports that have been brought out since then, we have a data set of well over 2,000 racist incidents that we've recorded. And so we have a fairly good idea of the type of incidents that people experience, who does what to whom and in what context. And also we have a fairly good sense of the institutional responses to those. And I think that that's the key thing. The key thing is, first of all, that people do experience very high levels of racism and discrimination, and people from all kinds of backgrounds, people of African descent, that's, Black Irish people and people who are Africans. Asians, Muslims are targeted a lot. Especially women wearing headscarves, travellers, and migrants in general would be treated to the "you're not entitled to live here, you're not entitled to resources, go home." That type of trope, and they get treated, and that happens to people in their interpersonal actions on the street, in their neighbourhoods, and that sometimes culminates, and often culminates in acts of violence. But it also happens when people are interacting with services and institutions. So it's happened in doctor's surgeries, it's happened in schools, it's happened in Department of Social Protection offices, it happens in libraries, it happens, with local authorities when people are accessing housing or services to their housing. Very often what's reported to us is that people feel let down, obviously, by the incident itself, and then they feel very let down by the response of the institution around them, the fear or the shyness of their neighbours in responding to it. And so people, experience something negative, and then they feel let down by the wider, by the wider context in which they are, including the institutions. And we found in our reports evidence of what's called institutional racism, which is basically an inability of an institution to counter racism or to put in place policies that will ensure that somebody won't experience something negative on the basis of them being from a minority background.
Shane, I don't want to rerun the presidential election all over again, Shane, and I don't want to dwell on the, for want of a better way of putting it, the Peter Casey incident, because that has gotten massive media attention everywhere else, and we spoke about it here ourselves on previous programs. But did you notice a spike in reporting of racist incidents as a result of, and I'm being very diplomatic here, the shining of a light on the issue during the presidential election?
Yes, I mean, I do think so. There has been, yes, I have. There was definitely a spike on Twitter of anti-traveller comments in response to, and I'll call it quite frankly, Peter Casey, anti-traveller racism. And I think what's interesting about it is not just that Peter Casey made anti-traveller comments, and he did it rather unexpectedly. And you know, and in fairness to the Independents, you know, who were the first to capture this, they responded responsibly and pushed back and challenged it, and sought the counter argument immediately. But thereafter, the response of the media is something that really needs to be called into question, because you know, Peter Casey's a racist, or he's somebody who's prepared to use racism to throw travellers under the bus in a cynical attempt to boost his numbers, and he did that successfully, but he did it successfully because the media played into his game. They would, because their own agenda is to draw ratings. And so what you do is you have Peter Casey on and you invite the counter-argument. And this projects the image of balance. But in fact, it's not really balance at all. Because when somebody is recycling racist tropes, And making statements that are factually untrue, the responsibility is not to find the counter-argument. The responsibility of the journalist is to know the facts and to reframe the argument and to say, but aren't you just being a racist here in order to boost your ratings? Because that is what was going on.
But Peter Casey will argue that he is not a racist and that he made his comments, and he went on at length actually to explain, now I'm paraphrasing him here, Shane, that by granting travellers their own ethnic status, that it was actually drawing more attention to them and setting them aside from the community, because they now are being recognised as being something different instead of being amalgamated into the greater community. He will say that was his argument, if you follow where I'm coming from.
I'll say in the first off that somebody who's a racist will always say, I am not a racist, right? And what I said was not racist, when they're saying something racist. And secondly, that defence in itself is racist, because it is... because it's a naked statement of seeking to erase traveller identity and culture in the wider culture. And the point about this is that travellers are different. They're different but equal. We need to recognise and value travellers' differences. And recognising traveller ethnicity is about doing that. Travellers are a nomadic people who have been nomadic, the evidence suggests, and separate from settled culture for at least, I say, 1,000 years. And that's, you know, the population genetic studies show that, the sociolinguistic studies show that, you know, studies of the origins of the Xhelta, Gammon, and Kant, the dialect spoken traditionally by travellers, and other aspects of their very distinct culture and lore, all point to a separate culture which has lived symbiotically through down the centuries with settled society. The difficulty is that since 1963, the Irish state policy has been to erase, you know, since the Commission on Itinerancy reported in 1963, the person at the head of the commission, Charlie Haughey, said there will be no, and I quote, there will be no final solution to the traveller problem or to the itinerant problem until they've all been assimilated. And so, this, you know, 18 years after the Holocaust, when, you know, Roma and travellers in Europe were rounded up and annihilated in the Nazi final solution, here we have government policy openly talking about a final solution and erasing traveller culture. And you know, people will say, you know, of course they didn't intend to carry out acts of genocide against travellers. But a lot of the anti-traveller sentiment that's expressed out there is actually expressed in genocidal terms. A lot of the stuff that we've seen on Twitter, a lot of the stuff that we've had reported to us, has been framed in terms of people wanting to gas travellers. There's been a number of things. There was a Facebook group talking about using traveller children as shark bait. Only it was used in much, much stronger terms than that.
But Shane, can I just stop you there in relation to that? Because this is something now that I really want to talk to you about. Is it possible, and I imagine that with technology in the modern era, everything and anything is possible. Can we not trace that back to its origins and bring the people who are responsible for putting that rubbish up on the on a social media? Can we not bring them where they firmly and truly and honestly belong, in front of a judge in the district court?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll say there's a couple of things there. Is that one is it's very difficult. So we have a very ineffective legislative framework when it comes to challenging racism and hate crime in Ireland. Ireland is delinquent under the terms of the European Union framework decision on racism and xenophobia. It's not compliant with the Victims Directive. It's not compliant with a number of international instruments when it comes to combating racism and hate crime. We have no effective hate crime legislation at all. We have a very poor 1989 Prohibition of Incitement to Hatred Act, which is ludicrously ineffective, which is something that the state has recognized since at least 2000 is ineffective. And yes, it has not... And it has recognized that it's ineffective because it has been telling international bodies that it's reporting to, that it is conducting a review of it. And every year it tells them that it's conducting a review of it. So we're now in the 19th year of conducting a review of the 1989 Incitement to Hatred Act. So I'm thinking about sending them a bottle of champagne just to celebrate the lengthy review that they're doing. But notwithstanding that, and there is no legislation that names racism as a problem. So we don't have any hate crime legislation at all. And so it's very difficult to bring somebody to court for that. But it's also much more important, I would say, is to look at the institutional racism that underpins it, and the framings in the media and public discourse. You know, the discourse from the likes of Peter Casey, you know, but also like when the housing minister said, based on figures given to him by Dublin City Council last week, that 30% of applicants for housing were ineligible, when in fact, and that was the data given to him by Dublin City Council. One has to really question that, because that is, you know, palpably fake news. I mean, it's actually a falsehood that was said once and then repeated, but you said once by one authority and repeated by another. The fact of the matter is that the rate of ineligibility is something like 0.2%, and that 30%, the 30% referred to, are people who are not Irish nationals, but they're people who are residents here and who are perfectly entitled to housing. And how officialdom translates one into the other. And then you had a journalist saying, well, if that's the case, if that's the case, why aren't they deported? So you know, for one minute somebody is a non-national, the next minute they're being told that they're ineligible, and then in the next minute they're being told that they're illegal and fit for deportation, when in fact none of those things is the case. And it is in that context that vile racist discourse takes root, and that people think that they have permission to carry out attacks on people's homes.
But in relation to that, Shane, and I'm not for one moment standing up for the journalist here, but
sure,
I'm trying to frame this maybe not in a different way, but I can see the logic in the journalist's question, because his or her theory is, okay, well, if what you're telling me is right, then that person shouldn't be here. So if that person shouldn't be here, why aren't you deporting him? Because, of course, I think what the next question would be is, well, is it not actually true that you can't deport them because they are entitled to be here?
Yes, yes, yes. So, well, I mean, that may have been the case, but that isn't what was asked. And you know, and the point is, you know, we're talking about an experienced journalist and somebody with a strong reputation, you know, somebody with a household name. They should have been able and had the wherewithal to challenge that in all of its context. And that's the point I'm saying about responsible journalism, is that, you know, we have a failure, you know, on both sides. What we have here is fake news being propagated, right? And we have a failure on both sides to challenge it. And, you know, and this isn't, we're not in Trump's America, but we can, you know, but when you look at that, you can see, you know, how we got to Trump's America. And that's the danger I'm seeing here. Casey understood this. I underestimated Casey. I thought that he was inept, and I actually think that he's not. He comes across as befuddling, but he knows how to play the media very well. And the media have walked straight into his game in much the same way that Trump knows how to play the media well. And it really is incumbent on media and those of us in NGO and civil society, etc., to mount informed challenges to these falsehoods as they're being propagated. Because we're really, I'm very afraid for Irish society now. We are in danger of unleashing a toxic culture in which people think that they have permission and that they're acting on behalf of Irish society by carrying out acts of racial violence against people. And we need to nip it in the bud, and we need to tackle it at its source, which is deeply embedded within our public culture, media discourse, and political discourse, before the whole thing starts to skew. And we've seen that happen in Britain with Brexit. We've seen it happen in America. It's happening in Poland, in Hungary, in Austria. It's happened in France. It's happening in Italy. These are perilous times we live in. And if as a society we want to, you know, hold on to the liberties that we do have, then we need to work with people who are working for social justice, people who are in housing campaigns, people who are you know people looking for workers' rights, and so on and so forth.
Shane, do you think there? And you mentioned Trump and Trump's America. Do you think that his election and the way he is, and I use the phrase loosely, conducting himself in the media in America?
Yeah.
With what appears to be impunity, and we saw the incident yesterday with Jim Acosta from CNN, where he was his press accreditation for the White House was removed.
Yeah.
Do you think that has legitimized this type of behavior around the world?
I think so. I mean, I think that Peter Casey would not have thought that he could do this. Had that kind of thing not been going on in Trump's America. But I think I'd also like to state that Trump isn't an aberration. You know, there may be sections of the Republican Party and the whole of the Democrat Party in the US who are saying, you know, that, you know, he doesn't represent us, that that's uncouth and everything. But Trump is the apotheosis of a long American history of deep racism. You know, we're talking about a society that was founded on, you know, the genocide of Native Americans, and which built its wealth on the enslavement of Black Africans, and a society that still discriminates and carries out horrific acts of violence against both those groups, and it's a country. Which is a country whose policies have, even in the last 30 years, favored corporate power and smashed trade unions and attacked workers' rights and really damaged communities and increased the working hours of Americans. Americans now are holding down two or three insecure jobs and working much longer hours than they were in the 1950s. And the disparity between rich and poor is wider than it ever was. And Trump, in his foreign policy, in his domestic policy, in his racism, is only articulating in brasher, cruder terms what the institutions of the state have been doing for decades. And it is in that context that we need to really re-examine the fight against racism, I think, and say that the fight against racism, means that you need to make communities safe from racist attacks by having hate crime legislation and so forth. But you also need, we also need to challenge broader inequality so that the conditions in which dispossessed people who are homeless, people feeling the bite from the recession, from austerity, from the housing and accommodation crisis that we're going through in this country, aren't tempted by the kind of discourses I described to blame their neighbour because they are a traveller or because they're from a different country or they have a different coloured skin. And that's the challenge for us, to build social justice movements that are prepared to challenge the deep inequalities in the communities, communities in Dublin, working class communities in Dublin, and all over Ireland, and work together with other people who experience other inequalities to challenge those.
Well, Shane, I suppose we have to draw a line under this stage. The clock has beaten us, but the only thing I will say is that I would have to agree with you that it is endemic in society, because the very simple fact is, irrespective of what numbers he got, people wouldn't have voted for Trump if they didn't agree with him. And that certainly is a cause for concern. And as you say, we have had several incidents of it around Europe. And listening to you this morning, Shane, it is far from eradicated from our own country as well. Shane O'Curry from Enar, Ireland, thank you so much for joining me on the Thursday edition of Northside Today. Thanks a million, Shane. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Donny. Thanks. Bye. Bye.